Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Hello and welcome to The Aware Show. I am Lisa Garr, and it's such a joy, a true, true joy to be here with you today for all sorts of great information that inspires positive growth and change. Joining me today is a lifestyle alchemist. She is incredibly skilled at helping people who have autoimmune illnesses and different types of maybe secondary autoimmune illnesses and reversing them through one way is through this diagnosis through functional blood chemistry analysis, which is fantastic. She has really helped people who experience the symptoms of autoimmunity like fatigue and digestive issues and all sorts of difficult to diagnose medical symptoms to really help them regain lasting energy and resolve all sorts of problems. Welcome to the show, Kristen. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So you had yourself a big health challenge, right?
I did. I've actually had two in my lifetime. Yeah. One was almost 20 years ago. I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia.
Wow.
And given that label. And at first I was relieved because I was very, very sick. And for a young person, there were days I couldn't even brush my own hair. And I had started in Western medicine, and then through my path of healing myself completely, I found all these more integrative, holistic approaches to healthcare and healing, and I entered Asian medical school. I left pre-med, and I did get a degree from the university and then left and went into Asian medicine and functional healthcare and different forms of osteopathy and homeopathy because it all helped me completely heal. And then many years later, I was struggling with some health stuff again and went undiagnosed and misdiagnosed for many years and found out I had an autoimmune issue. I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Mm-hmm. And then began my second stage journey of healing and really getting to the root of that, because Western medicine kind of throws their arms up and says, well, sorry, you're going to have this forever, but that mm-hmm. didn't work for me.
Take this and medication.
Mm-hmm. So those are my two big health challenges that I've worked with in my life. And it's really empowered me to support and empower others on their health journey.
Let me ask you, what were some of the symptoms that you had when you were experiencing those?
Fatigue was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Foggy thinking. I would lose my words mid-sentence, or I'd forget something that I was just heading upstairs to get, or I'd lose my keys. I also had mysterious symptoms that would come and go, like digestive issues. You know, I would get pains in my gut or gas and bloating, and I couldn't figure out what it was I ate because it seemed like I was eating really, really well.
Right, right.
And then I'd get these occasional bad headaches or migraines and not be able to figure out where they came from. These kind of mysterious symptoms, or I would occasionally have a balance issue and not know what that was about. These things would kind of come and go,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't really dial it in until I found functional blood chemistry analysis.
Well, couldn't these things be misconstrued? I mean, fatigue, say you're working really hard, or migraines, mm-hmm. say you have allergies, or mm-hmm. balance, say you're not paying attention. How did you link them all? Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, because I have all these things. What? I run into stuff all the time. But is it because I'm really not paying attention, or my spatial recognition is off, or what level did you? I just want to know.
This is a great question. I'm really glad you're bringing this up, Lisa, because I think it's a common question for people. And it's very, very individualized. So a headache for me isn't going to be the same as a headache for you. Mm. And fatigue for you may not be the same as fatigue to one of your amazing listeners. So this is where getting to the root of things, as well as uncovering blocks to healing, can really, really change your life. Because it looks at someone as an individual, a biochemical individual. So what I did on my journey is start to look at what was going on in my biochemistry on the inside of my body so that I could be an informed consumer on the outside of my body in my life and my health instead of guessing. A lot of times with mysterious symptoms, people guess. And they guess on Google when they're doing searches for symptoms, and they guess in the health food store what supplement maybe will help their fatigue because they read about it somewhere, or their coworker said, hey, this herb could be really good for fatigue. But until we know where it's coming from, from where it's coming, we may not get the right supplement. We may not get the right therapy. We may not get the right lifestyle shift that will create a lasting result. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. So it's a bit different for everybody. I guess I want to know, where do you think it stems from before we go into how to repair it?
Yes. Well, for me and for almost every single patient I've worked with over the last 22 years, it can stem from many different places. And again, that's individualized. So I'll give you a couple of them because these are very common. And this leads me into some of the blocks to healing that have come up for me and my patients in our quest for vibrant health. So it can absolutely stem from nutritional deficiencies or oopses. We think we're doing something really, really good for ourselves. We're eating spinach, but we have a hidden food sensitivity to cooked spinach, not raw spinach, but cooked spinach, and we don't know this. And we may be causing immune dysfunction in our bodies that we wouldn't recognize unless we tested it. Because some hidden food sensitivities, you wouldn't feel a symptom for maybe 2 or 3 weeks after you ate that food. And it's very, very challenging. Say you eat a banana on January 1st, and on January 19th, you get a migraine.
Really?
And you may not be able to connect back to, hey, it must have been that banana I ate.
Wow.
These are hidden food sensitivities. And often, when there's been immune dysfunction, where there had been in my case, and with all autoimmune issues, there is a level of immune dysfunction, we need to go back and look at what we're eating and how we are digesting and assimilating it. This is a really important point that I like to empower people with this knowledge. A lot of people think if they're eating well, that they're doing great, and that's a very important piece of the puzzle. But you are not only what you eat, you are what you are able to digest and absorb.
That's a big distinction.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
And I found a lot of people have gut issues because of toxic chemicals in our air, in our water, in our beauty care products, even in our mothers at birth. Many chemicals pass through the placenta barrier, and newborns are being born with a pretty high toxic load.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some of the pieces. Unresolved trauma. I know in my case, I had a pretty significant car accident when I was 16. And although I worked on the head trauma and anxiety and pain and fear around that accident, my physical body had yet to totally unwind the cell memory. And that was a piece of my healing, was to resolve old traumas that were stuck in my tissue. And that can come up for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And we think we've done the head work, but there's more layers.
Well, wouldn't we know if we had undigested foods or certain foods that we would feel like every time I eat spinach, it doesn't feel good. But if I eat kale, I feel fine. But most people will say they can't. You know, don't we know after a while, like cheese for me, it just hurt. And I love cheese, but I cannot digest it. And now I don't even want to touch it.
Yes.
So, I mean, it doesn't. Don't we know, though? Because I can't. It looks like wax to me, and my body sent me this message saying, not good, do not use cheese. And I listened.
Yes.
Yes?
And this is such another excellent point, Lisa. So there are other people who are less in touch with their bodies, and they crave foods that they actually have a sensitivity to.
I guess I did crave it for about a week after I stopped. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Before
and
I realized,
people
yeah.
mistake that craving for a nutritional deficiency, or it's just misguiding their body. We often crave things that we're sensitive to. So anyone, and I invite your listeners and anyone working with their health to look at things that they resist and look at things that they crave or lean into and really want. And to ask deeper questions of what's motivating that craving. Is it emotional? Especially if it's around food. There's a lot of emotional cravings around food that can come up for people, especially in our culture.
Yeah.
But there's also our immune system, which is quite complex. And I'm so grateful it's complex because it can keep us healthy
right.
being complex.
Right.
And there are certain aspects of immune function where we won't get an immediate signal after we eat something. It can take days to weeks for that inflammatory reactive sensitivity to get turned on. And we may not associate it with the proper food if it's a week or 2 or 3 weeks after we've eaten it, and now we're getting a symptom. And that's part of the beauty and complexity of our immune system.
Mm-hmm.
So there are certain aspects of our immune system that will give us an immediate reaction. For example, an IgE response is like an anaphylactic response. That's a true food allergy versus a food sensitivity. And that will be immediate. The person will know.
Like for throwing up and so forth, or immediate.
Throwing up or swelling or throat closing or breaking out in hives,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
That's unmistakable.
Right.
And there are other aspects of our immune system where it's hidden.
Okay, so that's true. There are some unmistakable ones, and we think, oh, if we're not doing those throwing up throat closures, then we are most likely fine. We're not allergic. We just had a stomach ache. How can functional blood chemistry analysis take the guesswork out of all this?
I love it. Yes. Well, let me explain a little bit about how this is first different from what many of us think about when we think about our labs and getting our annual exam done. So firstly, I'd like to explain about reference ranges and where they come from. And I start here because this was a huge shock to me. And I really want your listeners to be informed consumers of their health. And it's a motto of mine, and it excites me when I can do that. So those reference ranges on our annual labs are compiled from the literally hundreds of thousands of people who go to the doctor every year and often don't feel well. They're ill.
Mm-hmm.
And their doctor says, hey, go get your labs done.
Mm-hmm.
And they go get their labs done, and we get their results. Well, those labs every few years compile all of that data and average them. And those become our new norms, our new normal reference ranges. And if you or your doctor, your naturopath has ever said or heard, yes, you fall within normal, to me, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a marker of health. It could mean you're a tenth of a point away from a diagnosable disease.
Mm-hmm.
But that won't be diagnosed until you are into much more tissue destruction and it's showing up on the far end of that reference range.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's clinically significant in the Western medical model. Now, in functional healthcare, in functional blood chemistry analysis, our reference ranges are much narrower, and these narrow reference ranges give us incredible information. I can help people find imbalances 5 to 10 years before they may have a symptom or a diagnosable disorder.
Oh.
And to me, that's real prevention.
That's through
so that's the
blood cell analysis?
That's the functional blood chemistry analysis, okay. Yes. And the second part that is really different from the annual lab you may get from your naturopath or your Western medical physician is that the way we interpret them and the way we order those labs are different. I like to see about 70 markers, and that includes a full thyroid panel, which is 10 markers. Not many people even know there are 10 markers to a full thyroid panel.
Mm-mm.
And it's not hard to get an endocrinologist order it. It's almost impossible. You have to really, really twist their arm. And it's not because they don't want to help you. They do want to help you. But their training and their scope of practice confines them to a standard of care that treats everybody the same and doesn't look at individualizing treatment programs. And because of that, if someone's TSH is off, their thyroid-stimulating hormone, the standard of care is give them a T4 supplement. They're not looking for why it's off. So reading the rest of those 9 markers is irrelevant for the most part.
Oh.
Sometimes they'll order 2 or 3 markers for a thyroid panel, but again, it's incredibly deficient. So how we order the lab, the quantity, about 70 markers is what I want to see versus 30, versus 10 to 20, maybe 30 if you're lucky with a naturopath. You'll find 10 to 20 on average at your annual exam on your lab. It's just not enough information.
Mm-mm.
Now, how I'm interpreting that is also very different because I'm not just looking at one single marker, say cholesterol. I'm looking for patterns. More often than not, cholesterol is not a true cholesterol issue.
Wow.
More often than not, it's an insulin resistance issue.
Mm.
And I'm looking for patterns in the blood. I'm not just looking to see what iron is like. I'm looking to see what the whole CBC plus a full iron panel with ferritin looks like. I'm looking to see how your antibodies are on your thyroid panel compared to your immune function on your CBC and your white blood cells. I'm looking at all of these details. I'm looking at markers of inflammation like homocysteine and different aspects of an iron panel can show inflammation, and your CRP can show inflammation. There are many markers of inflammation on my panel that direct me in guiding that individual on what's going on inside and how they can best address it through lifestyle and nutrition and supplementation.
That's why you're called a lifestyle alchemist. So if somebody does have, first of all, to order this full type of panel, an endocrinologist probably wouldn't even be able to, like your insurance wouldn't cover all of that at once.
Yes.
So you have to do this individually and then have somebody that's able to read what falls outside the functional ranges.
Correct.
Makes perfect sense. And so you can catch these. That's how you catch the imbalances before they manifest as symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Which is why I get so passionate about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, of course. No, that
I
makes perfect sense.
People that learn
know
about
this
and they can go to their doctors and ask more questions and say, hey, I really want these other markers done. Can we get my insurance to cover it? And if not, then let's find, you know, another way to do it. And
now,
there are other ways to do it. We can order labs outside your insurance, and we can use what your insurance will cover and look, even if you can't do the other or you choose not to, we can get a lot of information even from those 10 or 20 markers, which can guide more in-depth questioning of your primary healthcare physician, like, hey, this is a red marker according to some standards, and this is why I want to test these things now. Now we have a good reason. Can you bill insurance for it? So I'm open to having those conversations, and I love working on teams with other doctors because then the patient gets the best of all of our worlds and all of our expertise.
That makes a lot of sense. So if someone's already with the endocrinologist who can pass these things through the insurance for you because of their licenses, it helps when they work with you, and then you can get the best of both worlds. Very
yes.
nice. Okay, so let's talk about the alchemist part. When you do find out someone has a thyroid issue or a gallbladder or precursors to diabetes and, you know, through different heart conditions and so forth. Where do you start? Even and do most of the people come to you that are already pretty healthy? It's not like you're getting them off of pizza and donuts, right?
It depends.
Oh.
Usually people come to me because they have a symptom that nobody else has been able to figure out. Or they have a nagging something going on in their body and they're worried about it. Or they have a diagnosis. They want a second opinion and they want to take a more integrative, holistic approach. Of course, there are people that I work with and they are eating pizza and donuts. And that's the first place to start often is with nutrition. And that can be challenging to people because nutrition has a lot of emotional components. And there are people in our social circles and our families that may or may not be supportive of us really making these health changes. So I coach people and educate them and guide them on that journey so that they get a lasting result, that it's not just, oh, stop eating gluten. Right?
Right.
For some people, that might be really easy. For others, that could be a real struggle. But there are more pieces to that puzzle. And I kind of flesh them all out for someone and shine a light on the unconscious patterns that may be motivating someone to live a certain way, to eat a certain way, to be in relationship a certain way, to nourish their bodies in certain ways, to do self-care or not do self-care, to overwork or not overwork, to overeat or undereat. I'm also searching, this is the alchemy part, for the underlying and or unconscious aspects that may be motivating that person that they may or may not be aware of. And I believe if we bring awareness to them, and we move it from the unconscious into the conscious mind, now that person has a choice. And now they're empowered. And then I give them tools. And then they can use those tools in their life and with their families and with their partners and even at work in their relationships and how they are sharing their passions with the world.
Yeah.
And that's true integration and really embodiment practices.
Well, I felt both. Once I feel out of control and food is in control of me, then I feel different than when I'm in control of food. And it also mimics where I'm in control of my life and where I'm out of control of my life. So it's a balancing act, but do you feel that you're always in control of your food? You're never just unconsciously eating or going out a lot or anything like that. You're always in control of it, right?
I use a different word than control because in my world, control implies I have to exert my will. And I think that that can bring up a lot of concerns for people who are on a healing journey. Like, oh, I just don't have the willpower to do this.
Right. That's.
I just don't have the strength. So for me, it's not actually control. It's empowerment. And yes, am I empowered about my nutrition? Absolutely. Do I play the edge of that sometimes? Yes, I do. And that's how I learn. And that's how I heighten my awareness is by playing that edge. Like I flew into town last night. I brought food with me. I ate it on the plane. And then I had an hour drive and 3 hours later, I'm starving. And you know when you're hungry, it's the worst time to go to Whole Foods and go shopping.
Yes.
But that's
yes.
what I had to do. I just landed and I was starving. And I played the edge and I got these really, really scrumptious coconut, almond, flour, tortillas. And I know that 2 months ago, my body was not liking coconut. It was like, hey, you've done too much coconut day after day. You need to have a break. And I played the edge, and I was like, is my body going to receive this coconut tortilla okay? I know a couple months ago it didn't. So I played the edge. I took a risk. I was really hungry, and I did it. And my body spoke to me mildly, and I listened. And I went, wow, thank you, body, for letting me know right away, because sometimes my body can't let me know right away, and this time it did. So I honored my body. I listened to it. It's not about perfection. It's about awareness. And what was motivating my choice? I was starving. I didn't plan quite well enough for the long flight. I had a little bit of food. I had some salmon and kale that I pre-made that I packed in my glass container in my backpack, and I didn't plan another snack, and I should have.
Wow. So that's a lot of planning. That's definitely, a lot of planning.
It can be, and that's a lifestyle choice that works for my body. There are plenty of bodies that don't need that level of planning, right? And that's okay, too.
No.
But mine does.
Yeah, I'm sure
they do. So I'm just going to honor where my body is, and I was tired, right? And so, there are all these variables. If I had a couple more hours of sleep and I had, another snack, then, hey, no problem, right? So, I learned, okay, how can I do that a little differently next time so that I stand in my power and I own my acts of love, my acts of self-love, and have a smoother ride. Not everybody needs that amount of detail, but some people do.
I
just teach people how to honor it and listen in a new way and how to make it fun.
I wanted to ask you about other issues, not necessarily autoimmune, but what about hormone imbalances and menopause and so forth that aren't usually from an illness, or are they?
Oh, I love it. Hmm. Well, it's interesting because a common word that people use in our culture is hysterical. And I'm guessing you and probably a lot of your listeners are familiar with where that came from. And women who were hormonal or menopausal or perimenopausal and were having huge mood fluctuations were often deemed
hysterical
and needed a hysterectomy. This is part of this word.
The part of the history of the word hysterectomy.
Correct.
Ah, gotcha.
And hysterical. And so as you bring up this topic, I'm very aware that when we start talking about hormones, there are many, many variables. And it used to be like a disease. Those mood swings, those symptoms used to be like, you have something broken. You have something wrong with you. And I really like to empower women to step in and own their power in a new way. I actually did my master's thesis in Oriental Medical School on menopause. And I found that through my research, there were other researchers that had studied women and their hormone fluctuations. And they also had permission to study monks. And when monks in isolation were in their deepest states of meditation, physiologically, they had many signs and symptoms of menopause according to their body tissue, their body metabolism, their body temperature, markers in their blood, hormone fluctuations. So this got me thinking, hold on, these monks are in meditation and they're physiologically mimicking a woman in menopause. What does this mean?
No matter what age, right?
Who are opening to a new awareness of themselves, of their bodies, of their consciousness. What else are they accessing in the higher realms, in higher states of consciousness? And I am now perimenopause and having some symptoms. And I also work with other women in that state and full menopause and even postmenopause. And there are physical variables that influence how we move through menopause and perimenopause. One would be nutrition, and depending on the soy content of our foods, the gluten content, the corn, GMO stuff, pesticides and chemicals, all of these can actually impact hormone receptors and our neurochemistry, which can impact our moods and how we transition through menopause. Mm. If we're using plastics in our environment, or we're drinking water from plastic bottles, or the water source that we're using may not be optimal, or we're in a high mercury content city like Chicago, where there's a lot of mercury in the air because of industry, and we're breathing it in, and how does that impact our thyroid gland and our brain and our hormone receptor sites? It greatly impacts it. And it greatly impacts our liver, which conjugates estrogen and helps clear it out of our system. So having a cleaner liver can make menopause transition much easier on a woman. So there are lots of variables and factors that we do have the ability to work with and shift and change and play with. It's not like, oh, I have to resign myself to feeling miserable and having hot flashes every 2 minutes and not sleeping and having incredible mood shifts. There's actually things that we can do to nourish our bodies and our souls during this sacred time of transition so that it can be with ease and we can begin to connect with the deeper sacred spiritual aspects of it.
Well, why does why would menopause, which is decreasing your level of hormone production, why would that lead to hysteria? To go back.
Well, I think that was a negative label that the patriarchy gave women who were having mood swings.
But it does happen. The mood swings does happen.
Absolutely. So I would say hormone imbalances can be impacted simply by a congested liver and your inability to clear certain hormones efficiently can cause big surges in hormones in your body.
But what about bioidentical hormones when doctors who are naturopathic or well-intended give the bioidentical hormones? What do you think that does to the body?
Well, it can confuse the body because although we are transitioning from, you know, having all of these hormones to losing just a few of them, which can make a big difference to a woman's feeling in her body, it can confuse the structures in the brain, like the pituitary gland, like the thalamus and the hypothalamus, like the ovaries. They get confused if a woman has ovaries still and has a uterus still. These things get confused then when we start introducing bioidentical hormones. And whether it's bioidentical or not, estrogen was placed on the FDA carcinogenic list. So even bioidentical estrogen will confuse the body and its natural hormone production, the rest of the hormones, not just the couple that are no longer being produced in the same way, but all of them. And it also confuses the root of where that hormone production and that signaling is coming from. So I understand how it is used to work with symptoms. Because menopause and a change in hormones is a symptom. It's not a root cause. And going deeper, we can address individual root causes for a woman and what's going on with her bigger health picture and life picture as she's going through this sacred transition.
Right.
And of course, some things are appropriate for some people at some time. But I just recently worked with a woman who's 73 and she's still on hormone replacement. And is that really appropriate for a woman who's 73? That seems very unnatural to me. We're supposed to go through a change. That's how our bodies were intended to be in nature. And this change, it can open things for us and our ability to connect with deeper wisdoms for us to be leaders in our communities. And if we're doing a bunch of hormones trying to manipulate Mother Nature, I'm curious what the motivating factor is for that. And is that woman truly fully informed, or is she just trusting the naturopath or her physician that she has to be on hormones the rest of her life?
And if it makes her hysterical, then it winds up acting in the adverse way and it doesn't work overall in the big picture. You mentioned that there are some foods for menopause. What are some types of foods that could help balance out or even just gain a little bit of natural estrogen production in the body?
Great. Well, and it depends if someone needs estrogen production or not. So not everybody going through menopause needs more estrogen production.
Oh.
Some people think they do, but that's actually not true. Biochemically, it's just not true. So let me put on my Asian medical hat.
Okay.
There are two foods that are magnificent for a woman who's either menstruating and having a lot of cramps and PMS, or a woman perimenopausal going through menopause. And these are carrots and beets. It's simple.
Okay.
Eating carrots and beets together can naturally help balance hormones.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
How?
Well, it's just the properties of carrots and beets when eaten together offer some hormone balance.
Okay.
It's just the properties of those nutrients and when they're combined. Also, estrogen, if someone does need a little boost in estrogen, there are estrogenic foods. Now, women who have estrogen-positive breast cancer or a history of that should avoid these foods. But foods like flax seed, for example, is estrogenic.
Oh, it is.
Flax is estrogenic.
Huh.
And so having a little tablespoon of flax meal or flax seeds every day can really be a fantastic source of a little natural estrogen for a woman if she's perimenopausal or menopause who needs that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say another food that can be very beneficial are omega-3 fatty acids. These have been shown to help balance symptoms of menopause in women. It helps with dryness. It helps with brain chemistry and brain functioning. It helps with joint and vaginal lubrication. And omegas are often best from fish. I like smaller fish like sardines, tiny fish, or krill. And also there are newer sources coming out from seaweed and kelp that are also being researched that have great omega-3 potential and really, really beneficial for our vegan and vegetarian friends that don't feel comfortable consuming fish.
Right.
So that's
right.
Another food as medicine for our menopausal and perimenopausal sisters.
Awesome, awesome. All right, so let's talk. First of all, quick question. Does it matter if the carrots and the beets are cooked or is it better raw?
I like to mix them up.
Okay, great.
I like to do some cooked and some raw, and I like to not have them be super-duper soggy and overcooked.
Okay.
So I like stir-frying them a bit or having them raw.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I want to ask you about two more things. We have a lot of things to ask you about, but why isn't going outside enough for proper vitamin D levels? Especially here in California,
question. We
have a lot of those.
Oh, I love it. Great question. Okay. Vitamin D is so important for so many functions in the body. So first of all, it's important for immune function, and anyone with autoimmune issues or any immune dysfunction or allergy, anything like that, we really need vitamin D. And even people without those symptoms often need vitamin D in our westernized world. I see it all the time in labs. And secondly, the process for vitamin D is very complicated. So most people would need to spend 25 to 35 minutes naked in the sun every day and then not take a shower for 24 to 48 hours, not put any creams or lotions or potions on because that'll disrupt it in the skin. And it's not very practical. And even then, if someone does that, if they already have immune dysfunction or they have anything going on in the channels of how that vitamin D is processed in the body, it won't get converted properly and they won't get the benefits. They'll just get the damaging sun rays. So vitamin D is really crucial for moving calcium into your bones as well. So taking it is pretty important. When you're in the sun, there's a chemical reaction that happens in your skin. If you have lotions, potions, sunscreen on, or you shower, it disrupts that chemical process, and it won't do its job.
Huh.
But that's not the only place. That chemical process on the skin, if it is successful, then goes to your liver. And it's still not usable vitamin D until it goes through your liver. And it has to have a lot of components and different chemical reactions in your liver, and it's still not usable. It then has to go to your kidneys. And now your kidneys have a huge chemical process to convert the unusable vitamin D to the usable form. Hmm. And after that's been successful, now it becomes usable vitamin D. And what I've found is most people have glitches somewhere in that process that doesn't allow them getting the vitamin D from the sun to be enough.
Hmm. That is a great explanation. That's a fantastic explanation. So vitamin D doses is really what you need to take. And is it liquid or the vitamin form? Which is the best?
Oh, I love that question, too, because I'm a little bit of a snob about this. And I'm guessing you are, too, Lisa, and a lot of your listeners are. So this is really, really important. I like an emulsified vitamin D. I love a vitamin D that's liquid. And vitamin D is a fat-soluble nutrient. So we want to take it with a fat or with a meal. And most producers of vitamin D, most vitamin companies, nutraceutical companies, know that it's fat-soluble, so they add a fat to it. And that fat is important. And if it's, say, rapeseed oil or canola oil or soy oil, these are not good choices.
Okay.
These often are rancid, bad oils that cause inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
I like to invite your listeners to look for a product that would have MCT oil or olive oil or beef fat or fish fat.
Or coconut? Is that the MCT?
Coconut oil would be like the MCT oil.
Okay.
MCT is made from coconut.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, or it could say coconut oil. And I think liquid is better. I just think it's absorbed better, although there are a couple of pills of vitamin D on the market that I have seen good results in labs with. I tend to get better results with certain liquids and some more than others. And so I tend to go with the ones I get the best results with.
The
dosing is important, right? Because someone could potentially overdose on vitamin D and they can underdose on vitamin D.
How do you overdose on it? What would that look like?
If you were taking, say, if you were taking 20,000 IUs of vitamin D every day for six months, you would overdose.
That
would be too much for your system, and you'd have to stop taking it for a while, and you could eventually have symptoms. It's rare. Most people don't take that high of a dose, but it could happen, or if you're trying to dose your child and you don't know how to dose a child, then you could overdose them. So then you'd want to take vitamin K2. It's nice to have a vitamin D supplement with K2 with it. That would prevent you from overdosing. And to take a lower dose, depending on what your labs have pointed out to you and your doctor. I think an average dose is 5,000 IUs. If someone's very deficient or they have an autoimmune issue, I'll start them perhaps at 10,000 IUs a day, and then after a month of that, wean them back to 2,000 or 5,000 IUs a day, and then alternate that every other month, depending on, you know, their individuality and what I'm seeing in their lab and what their history's like and where they live and how much sun they might have or how their liver and kidneys are functioning, et cetera.
Okay, so around 5 to 10,000 IUs work and having it fast. So what about the little the capsules that are in the oil base? What are those called?
Some of those can work really well. You just want to make sure that the oil base is a healthy oil. You want to check expiration dates, that it's not going rancid. You want to have your labs done every 6 months to a year so that we're monitoring your vitamin D levels and that you're not getting too toxic, that you're not taking too much or too little, or that the quality of the product you're taking is high, that you're reaping the benefit of your effort, right?
Right.
It's the worst feeling to say, hey, I've been taking vitamin D for a year, and your level, you know, your lab says you're at a level 30 as a vitamin D reading, which would be quite low. That could be really frustrating. So we want to make sure you're taking a professional product, a high-quality product that your body knows how to absorb and utilize.
Okay. Can I talk a little bit about the anti-aging phenomenon? And you talk about that menopause is a way to the body, you know, for the body to naturally move on and become more wise. What about the aging process? Is this something that we can avoid, like every industry is trying to tell us to do?
Well, instead of avoiding aging, I like to think about aging gracefully, with ease and joy and peace.
Okay.
My goal isn't to halt a natural process. My goal is to embody it in a new way and empower women to step into their wisdom as they age, their life experience as they age, with a broader perspective and also gratitude. That being said, I believe we can age more gracefully, and nutrition, supplements, lifestyle, and our thinking all play huge part of that game. They're all huge factors in how we age, as well as genetics. And with the genetic conversation, or part of the conversation, there's epigenetics and how our environment and our nutrition and our stress turns genes on or turns genes off.
That was my next question. Same was the stress.
Aging.
Yeah.
So
stress.
So we can turn healthier genes on as we age and age more gracefully.
So stress accelerates the aging process, right?
Absolutely.
Through the release of constant cortisol and the worry hormone, right?
Yes, and cytokine storms and inflammation. Absolutely, yes.
Okay, so in today's day and age, you have many people who are in the aging population that have lost retirements and that have no pensions left and so forth and are living below the poverty line in many ways.
Yes.
How do you age gracefully and not experience that level of stress? I guess it's more of a lifestyle question.
It's a beautiful question. And I believe it has to do with unplugging from the go, 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 fast, fast, fast culture that is driving a lot of our stressors. And I believe we can plug in and out of that culture in a way that nourishes us and feeds us and keeps us informed, but can keep us healthier.
Can we turn on and off the parasympathetic nervous system throughout the day? So,
yes.
For example, can we have like a little brain break in the middle of the day by walking outside in grass, and that would serve as a stress break, or does it have to be a full vacation?
No, absolutely. I gave a full vacation as an example, but you're really redirecting this beautifully. It can be moments throughout the day where we close the computer and we breathe. We can even stay at our desk, or we can take a bathroom break and go breathe for 5 minutes in the bathroom and imagine our feet deep in the earth. And that can downregulate our nervous system. Every 90 minutes, if we allow it, we go into a natural alpha phase brainwave pattern. And this is a downregulation of our nervous system. And you can tell this is happening. Say you're reading a book, or you're on your computer, or you're working, and you phase out for a minute, and you forget what you just read. Lisa, has that ever happened to you?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You're going into alpha.
Mm-hmm.
That's the clue. That's the signal.
That you need
close
it.
Close the
yes.
book.
Yeah.
Close the computer. Go outside. Take a deep breath of fresh air, or go put your feet on the earth. Go wash your hands in the bathroom and feel the water flowing over your hands. This can be a great mini break to calm your system down. And the more of these we build into our lifestyle and create healthier habits around it, the easier aging will become.
I think that's really doable. I think having little breaks like that and understanding, I like that, but when you understand what that break is doing and how it's serving the parasympathetic nervous system and giving your mind and body a full chance to relax, you realize that there's ebbs and flows with stress. It's just like the when you have the stress response and then the reverse of the stress response, where you go into a deep calm right after enormous stress. The body does it naturally anyway.
Right.
And this just helps a little bit.
Exactly. And this is where we're empowered. This is where we actually have choice. We don't always have a choice about the air we breathe. You know, I was in an airport. They're cleaning with bleach, right? I'm getting a toxic hit. I don't have a choice. I really needed to pee, right? Yeah. We don't always have choices. But where we do, I like to empower people to make a conscious choice, a conscious effort to own that, whether it's clean water or clean air or, hey, I have a choice in this moment of an organic apple or a non-organic apple. And depending on the market, even Safeway or wherever you're shopping, that choice, often there isn't a huge financial burden in that choice. Mm-hmm. You know, an organic apple isn't that much more than a non-organic apple, at least in a lot of the stores where I'm shopping, especially internationally. When I'm traveling, I was in Buenos Aires this year, and there are a lot of local food markets, and they're using a lot of pesticides. Mm-hmm. And I would wash my food really well, and I would shop as locally as I could so that I was being more responsible, and I did that mindfully. And when I travel in the States, I do the same thing. I was in Oklahoma. The only option for food was Walmart. How do I shop responsibly and nourish my body without overloading it with toxins, you know? And we can do this. I do this. We can all do this and become more empowered and make these choices, although they might seem small in the moment, like where do I get fresh air or clean water or fresh food, they have a long-term impact. Or how do I have clean body care products? Maybe you just use coconut oil on your body, and you don't have to worry about all the potions and the lotions. And something so simple can save you money in the long run and nourish your skin really beautifully. So it's about becoming informed, and then where we do have choice, understanding how we have a choice, and then choosing.
And, okay, so there's that. We can always have a little bit of choice around our sleep if we can really schedule it so that we get the full, and you recommend 8 hours, right?
It's individual, again. So personally, I do best with 9 hours. That's just how my body is.
Yeah.
Now, when my kids were teenagers, they needed like 12.
Yeah.
You know, it's just their body is in rapid development mode, and so they needed more sleep. Little babies need a lot of sleep because they're developing. Older people, their sleep changes. People who have stress might need more sleep at certain times of their monthly cycle. And I say cycle because not just menstrual cycle, but brain chemistry cycle and moon cycle. To honor that even men are cycling every month in some way, they may need an extra day of sleep, and to honor that in themselves, to not push through that. When you feel tired, to rest and to allow your body to have that down regulation, because this is also anti-aging. This is where we repair tissue.
Down regulation.
And our body naturally finds more balance. That's prevention of disease. If we are constantly overriding our need to sleep, to go, 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 push, 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 even if it's for fun things, it will take a toll on our system and our aging.
Now, I noticed that you've got a new book called The Ketogenic Cure, Heal Your Gut, Heal Your Life. Are you a huge proponent of the ketogenic diet? And talking about stress, does it put the body into any type of stress?
Great question. So the ketogenic diet or nutritional plan, the therapeutic plan that I outline in my book, is different from the standard ketogenic diet or nutritional plan that you may be familiar with, because mine is geared towards gut repair. And it's very individualized and unique. I coined the term ketogenic gut repair, and which means there is no dairy. Where a lot of ketogenic nutritional plans have high fat coming from dairy products such as yogurt and full fat milk, my plan does not have any dairy because dairy has been very well researched and shows to cause a lot of inflammation and immune system dysfunction. It's very difficult to digest because most humans after the age of 5 no longer make the enzymes needed to break down lactose and casein and digest it properly.
Right. Right.
So my nutritional therapeutic ketogenic gut repair plan is different than a regular ketogenic nutritional plan. Now, ketogenic eating is not new. Although it kind of seems like it's a new fad, it's been around for a very long time. And it was originally used to help children who had pretty significant disorders of epilepsy, and especially children who weren't responding to medication responded very well to a ketogenic therapeutic nutritional plan. So it's been around a long time.
Can you outline that for us real quick? Like, what is that?
It's a higher fat, moderate to low protein, very high veggie content therapeutic plan. Low to no carbohydrates or starches. The fats come from healthier sources such as avocado, coconut. Our brains, our cardiovascular system, our actual heart muscle, and every major organ system in the body works more efficiently from using fat as fuel versus sugar or carbohydrates or glucose or glycogen storage.
Any type
in the
of
muscle.
Sugar. Mm. So I noticed that it has no sugar. And
correct.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it's high fat, low to moderate protein, high veggie, and low to no carb, and no sugar, no alcohol, no dairy. Well, lots of great information here, and thank you so much. And where can people find out more information about you?
My website, KristenGraceMcGarry.com, and I'll spell it because my middle name is spelled in a different way. It's KristenGraceMcGarry. MCGARY.com.
And you can also go to theawareshow.com and the information's on Kristen's page right there on our website in case you were driving and you didn't have a chance to write that down. Great. Great, great, great. Thank you so much. And great book out coming out called The Ketogenic Cure, Heal Your Gut, Heal Your Life. And Kristen Grace McGarry is in places speaking all over the place. So you can work with her personally, or you can also go find out more about the functional blood chemistry analysis and the 8 essentials for optimum health. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me.
Absolutely. Lots of great information. All right. And that is it for me today. Thank you so much for listening. You can also catch some of our Aware Show episodes on Gaia TV. It's called Inspirations on Gaia. And if you go to inspirationsongaia.com, then you can check out, we have some 200 shows on that network. So it's Inspirations on Gaia, GAIA.com, if you want to watch some of the episodes of some of our favorite guests. And I'm Lisa Garr. Until next time, I invite you to stay aware.